Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. Today, we'll be previewing the Pacific Division. Joining me, as always, are Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, guys?
It's going well, Bri. How about you, you sicko?
I'm getting over a cold, so I apologize in advance if I sound a little froggy. I'm also dealing with the news that Ben Simmons has a foot fracture. I'm actually a little less upset than the rest of Sixers Twitter right now, just because I think it's less of a big deal than people are making it out to be. But we'll touch on that in a couple weeks once we have more info. Today we're going to start with, who else? The Golden State Warriors, who, if you didn't know, blew a 3-1 lead in the finals. After doing that, however, they stuck a giant middle finger up to the rest of the association by signing Kevin Durant. They also brought in Zaza Pachulia, David West, and then drafted a couple sneaky fun guys, Damian Jones and Pat McCaw. So, I mean, let's start with the obvious question. Mort, how do you guard this team?
Well, you try your best, but in the end, you can't. Like, we spoke about this at some point. I don't think we ever recorded it, but we did talk about how many players here can shoot off the curl, like off the ball. And when you have so many guys who can get a shot up without having to create for 5 or 10 seconds, you have the potential to become immensely efficient, considering the personnel that is already going to be implemented straight away. Like, Steph is one of the most efficient players of all time. KD the same. Klay is well on his way to becoming one of the most efficient two guards in league history. And then you have Draymond Green, who is slowly but surely becoming a very efficient scorer in his own right. I mean, I don't have an answer there, Brian. It's impossible. Like, last year, you could argue that if you forced the ball over to Harrison Barnes and asked him to do something with it, mm-hmm. that was probably the best bet you had as a defense. But now that role is Kevin Durant's, and he can go into the post.
Right.
He can go into the post. He can isolate. He can shoot off the curl. He won't, like, miss. Harrison Barnes missed, like, 5 wide-open corner threes during a two-game stretch in the finals.
Yeah.
You won't see KD do that. I don't think you can guard this team. But what's more interesting is, can you even stop them on defense as well? I mean, you can't. Like, KD can switch. Mm-hmm. Draymond can switch. Curry is a nuisance. Klay is one of the better two guards. And Zaza Pachulia, while not known as some sort of defensive anchor, is still big, mobile, agile, can still play some pretty solid defense. And off the pine, you have Sean Livingston, who is a 6'7 freakish point guard who can just, he's got arms for days.
Yep.
How do you even stop them defensively? How do you get through that defensive line? How do you score on them?
Sarah, do you have any ideas?
I think we all have to hope against hope that they just really miss those bogus screens.
Yeah.
But they still have Draymond, and Zaza's probably going to be able to step really easily into that bruiser role. So he may not be as skilled, though, at the whole, like, I'm on skates, somebody's running into me, and that's why mm-hmm. I'm moving on this moving screen thing.
Right.
But Bogut was a master. He was a real artist. But
yeah, I think that's an underrated thing that they're going to miss. I really do.
It is, but will it be enough? Probably not to right. make a big difference. But yeah, I was going to say maybe you have to hope that you can score with them, but then Morten just squashed all of those dreams. So.
Yeah, sorry NBA fans. I know who I have picked for the finals.
Yeah.
Or for the championship, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so it sounds like, barring injuries, the only thing that could really trip up the Warriors is chemistry. Because obviously, replacing Barnes, who is a low-usage player, with Durant, who's one of the higher-usage forwards in the league, someone needs to sacrifice, despite what Klay Thompson continues to say, and what Steph Curry continues to say. So, Sarah, who do you think winds up sacrificing the most with KD's arrival? Klay, Steph, or Draymond?
I think that's a really interesting point that you bring up, and a really underrated thing is chemistry. I think everyone thinks they're going to fit seamlessly, and for the most part, I think they will. Like, we already got a taste of it in the Olympics without Steph, of course. But I do think Steph's job gets harder. even though it should be easier. And KD will alleviate some of the pressures on him, but people are still going to expect the back-to-back MVP to score at a certain rate and do certain things. But at the same time, he's going to feel like he needs to get Durant involved and everybody else involved, because that's your job as the point guard. So it gets tricky for him. They're lucky that they're in a system that's already kind of about sharing the ball and equal opportunity. So that's going to help. But I think his job gets harder. But as you alluded to, Clay keeps being the one to deny it. But I think it is going to be tough for him. Because, I mean, this is just my opinion, and other people might think it's crazy, and that's okay. But I do think he can have a tendency to kind of be less involved in the game and kind of, you know, back out of it anyway. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be an interesting year for him, definitely.
Yeah. Mort, what about you? Who do you think sacrifices the most here?
I think everyone, but in a different way. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling, or I could call it a sneaky suspicion, that they are going to Spurs it up.
Ooh.
I believe that each and every one of them has gotten over their ego stage.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're all committed to winning and sacrificing. And if that means KD is going out and scoring 18 here, 22 here, like an average is a flat 20, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. And the same goes for Steph. The same goes for Clay. And, you know, Draymond isn't a big scorer. Like, he can score, but he's not a guy who's looking to get 20. He can settle in for 7 a game if that's what the defense gives him. He's perfectly satisfied just playing defense, rebounding, and pushing the ball. I have a feeling that they are setting their ego away at the door. I think Steve Kerr has a big part in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I believe they are going to completely Spurs/Bulls of 96 it up, like completely putting every ounce of ego away.
Yeah.
Meaning probably 3 players who average around 22 or 23 points.
I could definitely see that. And I think you bring up a good point in that. I mean, all of these guys now have gone through heartbreak in the playoffs, and particularly in the finals. I mean, the Warriors, as we mentioned, had last year's meltdown.
Here it came again.
Yeah.
3-1. They lost 3-1. Don't forget it.
We're going to mention it a lot, guys. Sorry. You have Kevin Durant on a 73-win team. Deal with it. But, you know, KD also, like, they should have put the Warriors out in the playoffs last year. Yeah. And then they melted down, and Klay went thermonuclear in game 6. So, and then KD also in the 2012 finals, you know, they win game 1 and looks like LeBron's on the ropes, and then the Heat just annihilate them. So I think they are at the point now where all of those guys are on long-term contracts. They all got their money. They're all known as stars. Like, the only thing left is to win. So it would not surprise me at all, more to your point, you know, to see everyone's averages go down proportionally rather than, you know, Clay going from like 20 points to 10 a game, just everyone shaving a couple points off their average.
Yeah.
And that's really the question, isn't it? I mean, if they are there where they all can set their ego aside and they don't care who's the leading scorer on any given night, then it's over for everybody.
Yeah.
They might have some chemistry issues at the very beginning, just figuring it out. But yeah, that's really the only question. And we'll find out soon enough.
Yeah. I mean, we saw it with the Heat in 2010. You know, it took them a little bit of time. I mean, frankly, a year and a half before they really hit their stride. But I think they were, 9-8 in the first portion of that year. And everyone's kind of circling like buzzards, like, when's Spo getting fired? What's going on here? And then, you know, finally they put it together and looked like the next dynasty until LeBron left. But and until your Spurs intervened, Sarah.
Right. I'm so glad you brought up the Heat there, because I've seen so many comparisons to the Heat after the KD signing, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such a faulty comparison, because neither LeBron nor Wade were these types of long-range shooters. Like, LeBron actually had one season in which he shot over 40% and was just, otherworldly. But take that away, and they were not strong shooters. They were strong scorers, but they even had the same places of attack. Like, just a little smidge off the high post. That's where they went to work, and they loved the right side. And here, it's so much more well-rounded.
Yeah.
you have these guys who can stretch the floor like automatically. KD, you can have him for, you know, if they play like a weak team and he doesn't need to assert himself on the dribble a lot, you can have him in the corner and he'll drop seven trace on you. Like, it wouldn't matter.
Right.
So I think there is a foundation here for them to integrate Durant a lot easier than it was to, like, get Wade, LeBron, yeah, and Bosh to mesh, because, you know, Bosh didn't even develop that three-point shot, mm-hmm, until, like, a couple of years in anyway.
Right.
And he also got tremendously better at, you know, playing defense. That first year, he was kind of learning the defensive schemes a little bit. I just don't see that many hiccups here. I don't see that many challenges. Maybe I'm just, you know, sipping the Kool-Aid a whole lot, but I really have a tough time seeing how something a major problem could suddenly be, you know, be relevant. I don't see it.
I think you brought up the word foundation, and I think that's the key. What we have to remember is the Heat were bringing in both LeBron and Bosh, and basically were an entirely different team than they were the year before. You know, the Heat were terrible that year before, and then they bring in these two superstars. But that's a completely, like, you're overhauling the entire system, basically. Here.
And Mike Miller, like the culture setter as well.
Right. But here, it's just, I mean, the Warriors lost a lot of important bench pieces, which we'll talk about shortly. But they still have Steph, Clay, Draymond, Sean Livingston, Andre Iguodala. Like, they still have a lot of the team that went 73-9 and made the finals two straight years and won the championship 2 years ago. So they're much more fortified coming in than that 2010 Heat team was. So, I mean, to that point, and we said it earlier, I think the only thing that's really going to trip this team up is egos, but it sounds like none of us are convinced that that's going to be a huge issue. I just mentioned they lost a number of important contributors. Aside from Harrison Barnes and Bogut, they also lost Leandro Barbosa, Maurice Spates, Festus Ezeli. So which under-the-radar player do you guys think has the biggest impact on this team? Sarah, let's start with you.
I think it has to be some of the young bigs, because that is where they had the most turnover. Honestly, I always kind of liked McAdoo. I think he's got some good upside. So if he can get on the floor, which I think he will, I think he could have a big impact for them.
I like that. How about you, Morton?
Yeah, how can I top that? When he even saw finals minutes.
He did. That's true.
Yeah, that was. But Damian Jones, I believe he's injured right now. He's not going to play like immediately, right?
Yeah.
No, yeah. But I read a piece, I forget who, one of the local writers, that they were really, you know, trying to develop him and hope to bring him along. A little bit slowly, of course, because he was injured. But they were counting on him for, like, come playoff time, hopefully. Like, they want to integrate him during the course of the season so he can play, you know, potentially a heavy minute load in the playoffs, if it's deemed necessary.
Interesting.
So, I'm going to go with Jones. I think he's pretty intriguing.
I like it. Yeah. All right. I'm going complete out of left field pick. This guy might not even make it out of training camp. But JaVale McGee, if he gets his head on straight, like, he doesn't need to do all that much. And so he just needs to know his role, and his role is just to rebound and block shots, basically be Ezeli from last year. But, like, the dude is very talented. He's basically just, like, the big man version of Nick Young. So if he look at J.R. Smith, too. Like, he was a knucklehead for so long, and he went to the Cavs and got his head on straight, and now he's, you know, a key contributor for a championship team. So I don't know that McGee makes it out of training camp, but given their need for bigs, especially with Jones banged up to start the year, I'm taking him. I think he could actually be a sneaky good piece on this roster. So before we move on, let's go to the big question. They won 73 last year. Vegas set their over-under at 66.5 this year. If you had to bet, which side would you take, Sarah?
Oh man. I just feel like they're going to be right around where the Spurs were last year, where they were 2 years ago, right around 67. But if I had to bet, I guess I would take the under. I just don't think they're going to be as all out for that this year. They're kind of going to take it easy. So Yeah, I guess. That's what I'm thinking. That's a tough one.
Yeah, I know. Vegas set that line very well.
Yeah.
Morton, what about you?
I believe the Warriors will have the first back-to-back 70-win seasons in NBA history. Because I think that because they're not focusing on it right now, I think they're just going to play their game, they're going to relax, and then wins are just going to come so easy to them.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think they just hit another level now. I think the fact that they have this talented roster, and I don't think the bench, okay, it's slightly thin, but I don't think it's that big of a problem as people are making it out to be.
Mm-hmm.
I could totally see them just, you know, cruising their way to 70 wins and not, you know, with no care in the world for anything. They're just like focused on the playoffs. Now, if Steve Kerr decides to like sit the four big stars on any given night, then fair enough, I could see the under. But if he's not, and he just settles for like, okay, 20 minutes tonight, KD.
Yeah.
I could still see it going. Just, by the way, one question here. Why did Maurice Spates sign with the Clippers when he could have signed the minimum with Golden State? Like, there are minutes to get at the big position. I didn't get that decision. Like, he signed for the vets minimum in LA, right?
Yeah, he did. And I honestly don't know, but are we sure that the Warriors offered him a contract?
Oh, see, now, if they didn't, that would be, like, the one thing I would point to over the summer and say, oh, you messed up.
Yeah.
That's a guy who can come in and play 12 minutes and get you 12 points. Like, yeah. Here and there, of course.
Yeah.
He's going to shoot a lot.
Right.
But you could also use him as a stretch center.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just imagine the lineups. You could have Spates, Draymond, KD, Klay, and Steph. Like, that's five out right there.
Yeah. We'll just wait till JaVale McGee starts shooting threes.
Oh, and you know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know it's going to happen.
For sure. So I'm actually, Sarah, I think I'm going with you. I'll take slightly under. I would say, honestly, 66. I just think they're
haters.
I mean, I could see it as 70. I really just think that drive for 73 burned them out last year, and they know that. And I think Kerr is going to liberally rest guys just to keep people fresh for the playoffs. So,
yeah,
let's move on to probably the next most interesting team in this conference. I mean, all five of these teams are actually pretty interesting. It's the exact opposite of the Southeast. but the Los Angeles Lakers, in their first year without Kobe Bryant since the late 90s, they've brought in Brandon Ingram, the number two pick. They got a Luol Deng and Timofey Mozgov in free agency as their big signings. Yi Jianlian took a flyer on him. Luke Walton is their new coach. So I think, I mean, you know, obviously the big question is, what do they look like without Kobe? But the thing I'm actually probably most interested in is, what do we see out of D'Angelo Russell now that he's free for Byron Scott?
Do you remember if it was Universal or whatever movie production company that made Braveheart?
I don't because remember.
Because we need to like apply for a license so we can use Mel Gibson's Cry for Freedom. That's where we're at with D'Angelo.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure. Yeah. He's even come out and said recently that he didn't have the support that he thought he was going to last year, and his offseason was like a total cluster F. And then Byron Scott, I think TMZ tracked him down after he made those comments. And he's like, I have no relationship with D'Angelo Russell, and I have no interest in having one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, Luke Walton has been singing Russell's praises the whole summer, and he said he could be an all-star caliber point guard. I mean, he showed flashes at the end of last year. I mean, the kids, you know, he didn't rise up to be the number two pick out of nowhere. Like, I don't think he's a bust by any means. I think it's way too early to write him off, especially Byron was awful, man. Like, Byron was the worst coach of the NBA by far last year. So yeah. I think Lakers fans have reason to be very excited about Russell. You know, Ingram is, you know, the big attraction because he's the new flashy thing, but I think Russell is honestly going to be their most important piece this year. Morty, I'm going to go to you with this next one, since you are familiar with Luol Deng, given your history with the Bulls. So Luke Walton has said he's going to bring Ingram off the bench to start the year, which presumably means Deng is going to start at the three. You agree or disagree with that?
I disagree. I don't think it's a good idea to put Lou at the three. I know it was his natural position for a decade, well over a decade. But he's got a little slower, which is, you know, it's fair. He's going to be, I think he's 31 now. He's from 85, so he's 31 now. Mm-hmm. And he's played a ton of minutes. Sure. And it just seemed like he looked a lot better at the four last year in Miami. Mm-hmm. It seemed like it gave the Heat a little bit more space to operate, and just he seemed like a more natural fit of that slot. But I understand why they are slotting him into the three, because they have Julius Randle, you know, playing the four. I'm not necessarily a huge believer in Randle yet. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of red flags and a lot of concerns about his play, and I think Deng would add some stability to the four spot instead. Mm-hmm. But it's not something I'm losing any sleep over. He'll help them regardless, Deng, of course, by playing the three or four. But I just think you kind of waste his game a little bit by forcing him to match up against a lot quicker guys.
Interesting. Sarah, what do you think about that one?
I'm not going to challenge anything Morton said. I really didn't get to see him play a lot last year at the four, so I have to take his word for it that he fit better there.
Yeah. It was
where
after...
did they play Nance? Did they play Nance at the four as well?
Oh, I don't. I think they kind of switched him between both spots, but now, you know, now they have Mozgov and they have Zubac, so I would assume he's going to play most of his minutes at the four.
Okay.
Well, Nance actually, if I'm not mistaken, he played the four and five, right?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought
not three and four.
I was like, did I miss something?
No, four and five.
Yeah.
You know, I'm torn on this Deng thing, because you brought up some really good points, Morton, and you know, he really did. It was after the All Star break, Sarah, when Bosch went out, they put Deng at the four like exclusively, and he blew up. I mean, he had like, I don't remember his exact averages, but it was somewhere around like 15 points, 8 rebounds, a couple assists. Yeah. I think
he murdered Charlotte in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think his shooting efficiency also went up significantly at the four. Yeah. So it did seem like that was the natural position for him. I would assume he's going to get some minutes at the four off the bench behind Randle, like maybe they even do some like Randle at the five, Deng at the four, small ball stuff. You know, Ingram's really thin. Like that's not a slight against him. It's what we knew about him coming in, but the dude's like 200 pounds soaking wet. So I don't know that he's going to be able to withstand the pounding of being a starter right away. Like I think it's smart of Walton to recognize that limitation and try to preserve his body, especially at the beginning of the year. I mean, there's no guarantee Deng stays a starter the entire season, but at least to start the year, you know, they've got a lot of offensive minded guys in their starting lineup already between Russell, Jordan Clarkson, and Randle. So for that reason, I kind of like Ingram off the bench as like this microwave scoring sixth man. Like, mm-hmm. you know, he's obviously their long-term starter at the three. That's not going to be his role forever. But if he's, you know, if he's amenable to starting his career off the bench, which is impressive for someone with his draft status, then good on Luke Walton for taking advantage of it. I think
I wonder if they signed Deng to move him, like later on
to trade him. It wouldn't surprise me. Like, yeah.
You know, we can look at, and this credit goes out to Mark Deeks, because he was the one who wrote a tremendous piece on it years back and actually reiterated his points recently. But Denver re-signed Nene back in the day.
Yep.
And they didn't want Nene. They re-signed him so they could have like a trade chip.
Right.
And then they traded him for JaVale, ironically, we talked about earlier, as sort of their pseudo free agent acquisition.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
It's kind of interesting to see like the dynamics there, because theoretically, if they give Julius Randle a lot of minutes this year and he has like a lot of raw stats, which he did last year as well, but might be missing a little bit, then they could package he and Deng for a legitimate four, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, just spitballing that out there. And then they could do that for year two of Ingram. Then they could run out, you know, Russell, Clarkson, Ingram, whatever they get for Dang and Randall. Okay, and then Timothy Moskov. But, you know, you get my point.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a good point. Because, I mean, on the surface, it makes no sense for one of your big free agent signings to play the same position as your star draft pick. You're looking at you, Orlando. But, but yeah, I mean, it makes sense that, you know, I think Dang will be like a good veteran leader to kind of show Ingram the ropes and like,
oh, hell yeah,
give him this, you know, teach him like how to be a two-way player, because that was Dang's specialty. Like, he was never a elite scorer, but like, the dude was, under Tibbs, he was one of the best lockdown wings in the league. So if
you know why the Bulls sucked for the last 2 years and was so inconsistent, it was because they traded Dang midway through the year before.
Yeah.
Not having Luol Deng there ruined the entire chemistry of the roster. Deng is such an underrated teammate and locker room guy, and it's something that, you know, people in this day and age, and myself included, we all like advanced stats, right? Mm-hmm. We look at the advanced numbers and we kind of pick and choose guys who have the right numbers. That's fine, that's fair, but sometimes we forget the human angle of it. And Deng is the one guy you just can't miss that part of.
Yeah.
Like, he's the guy who would always, like, put his arm around the rookie, just tell him to keep his head up, like, okay, don't worry about it. Let me show you where to stand. Let me move you over here. You know, you can get a shot here. I'll set a screen here. He was very, like, directive. And then after they traded him, like, no one really picked it up. Joakim tried for a period, mm-hmm. but then his knee got bad and you know, things just started sucking, and Lou still has that ability. Lou still is that type of guy.
Yeah.
Because he's so good at heart. I think he's going to be like a mentor.
Yeah.
For Ingram, and not in like, oh, like the typical vet coming in to teach the rook kind of stuff, but like a legitimate mentor. KD to Towns mentor.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're both Duke guys, right?
That's right.
So they've got that Coach K pedigree working for them. Morton, you mentioned Mozgov earlier as you scoffed at him. So, Sarah, I'm going to throw this.
Oh, no, that's not fair. I scoffed at the $64 million. Okay. Mozgov is fine. I like Mozgov. I just scoffed at the $64 million because, you know, I don't like Mozgov that much, though.
Yeah, that's fair. So, Sarah, I'm going to throw this one to you, given your infatuation with big men. Do you think there's any way he lives up to that contract that he signed this summer?
Probably not quite that, no. but I mean, considering some of the numbers that got thrown around this summer, it's not like miles off, but it's yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
I love Larry Nance Jr., so I don't even have room in my heart for any other bigs on the Lakers right now. That's it. I mean, I've seen people pushing for him over Randall, and I think that's a fair argument. I don't see why not. But, I mean, talking about Ingram starting on the bench, they could have a pretty fun bench unit. You could have Huertas. I don't know who you'd put it to. Maybe Lou Williams, Ingram, Nance Jr., and then possibly Yee, depending on whether you're big or not.
Right.
That could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. So,
yeah, Mozgov is what he is. But he is, like Morton said, he's a fair player. He's fine, but that is a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. And Morton, I think we know you are pretty out on Mozzie at $64 million. And, you know, we all laughed at it at the time when free agency started. It's a crazy price. But, you know, you guys both said it. He's a good player. Like, 2 years ago, he was a huge key to the Cavs. You know, they were pretty crappy halfway through the year. They trade for Mozgov, they get JR and Shump, and all of a sudden they make it to the finals. Like, he was a big piece of that team. So I think, you know.
Oh, he was.
Especially.
And I'll admit something right here. I actually said in my Danish podcast that he would be an all-star last year. I thought he would build on the 2015 finals and actually go into 2015, 2016 and become an all-star for the Cavs, because it seemed like he was capable of having the ball run through him.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, things just didn't happen for him.
Yes.
And yeah, things went downhill, and then $64 million now looks utterly ridiculous, as do I, by the way, for the all-star comment.
Right.
You didn't even have to share that, because none of us understand Danish.
I'm just realizing that right now. Yeah. That should have stayed in my vault, because you guys don't understand Danish. It was just my fear of you guys finding out, but no.
You could have let that one slide. We would have no idea. I mean, Mazi did come back, it sounds like, last year, a little bit too early from knee surgery, is what Brian Windhorst reported, and he never fully recovered, so maybe... with a full summer off, and he'll look a little bit better. I mean, anything's going to be an improvement over what Roy Hibbert provided last year, bless his heart. So, I think we're all agreed that he's not going to be a $16 million a year player, but he is going to be a valuable piece to this team. So let's go back to the over-under game. You know, Vegas has them at 24.5, and this was before the Simmons injury, but that was the second worst record in the league, ahead of only Brooklyn, I believe. Do you guys think they're going to be that bad this year?
I probably have the over.
Okay. Like, how far over is what I should have asked?
You know, that's a really good question.
Mm-hmm.
It could be everything. Like if I say over, it could be anything from 25 and actually all the way up to like 37, 38.
Right.
Like there's like a pretty large spread right there. I think a lot hinges on Deng's continued effectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they have to like adjust to life without Kobe.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the elephant in the room, right?
Sure.
Because now you don't have the bailout guy.
Yeah.
There's been a bailout guy there for 20 damn years. Mm-hmm. Like, who's the bailout guy? D'Angelo Russell? Like, he's not tried that all for a full year. So he's going to be like, okay, I'm the bailout guy now. Like, that's something he needs to adjust to.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Ingram. He's a big question mark as of right now. We're not sure if he's going to, you know, average 5 points or 15. Let's be honest.
Right.
But a gun to my head, about between 25 and 31.
Okay. Sarah, how about you?
You know, they have a talented young team. Like, I know that Lakers fans are suffering a loss, as am I, but it's, you know, they have reason to be excited. Mm-hmm. But see, when you get into specific game counts, you get into math, and that's beyond me. But fair. I do. Like, I feel like they should win a few more than that, but when I look at what are the teams that they're going to beat, like who are they going to feast on, there really aren't a lot of those.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for me to really come up with much more than 24 wins.
That's a fair point. Yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
And they still have to learn how to win, too. I mean, they're so young. I think they're going to be in some games,
mm-hmm.
but then that closing time will come and they won't. They got to figure that out still.
Yeah.
So
they'll be the Sixers for the last 3 years, basically. You know, I was shocked when I saw this number, because I might just be irrationally high on them, but I feel like Deng and Mozgov fill some big holes. You know, I talked earlier, I expect Russell to have a huge year. You know, I think adding Luke Walton is going to add 3 or 4 wins on its own, just because Byron Scott was so damn awful last year. You know, I'm seeing like the low to mid 30s. More so than the 20s for the Lakers. I might be higher on them than I should be, but I really don't think they're going to be anywhere near as bad as their Vegas pick. So if I were their betting man, the over for them and the under for the Sixers would be two of my rock solid locks for this year. Let's move on to the tire fire of the division, the Sacramento Kings, who...
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, so they could be, you know, they're interesting this year. Let's put it that way. They added Dave Yeager. They lost George Karl. So that is an upgrade. They added a couple of 2 guards in Aaron Aflalo and Malachi Richardson. Got rid of Marco Bellinelli and Seth Curry. So Ben McLemore is still just as buried as he always was. And then they added a bunch of big men in the draft. Scala Bissieri and Joyos Papianis. So now they have about 7,000 centers, even though their best player is best at the 5.
I'm still trying to figure out where the interesting part came, Brian.
So let's start with Boogie, because that's always the big story with Sacramento. Do you guys think he connects with Jaeger like he did with Mike Malone, or is this another George Karl situation waiting to happen?
Oh, it looks like Sarah and I disagree, because she was shaking her head. I actually think Dave Jaeger is like the perfect coach for Boogie, because I think he resembles Mike Malone. And he doesn't have this built-in ego of George Carr.
Yeah, right.
I think you need to have a guy who's got a lot of patience, and it seems to me that Jaeger does have that ability. I mean, honestly, it's just like a hunch. It's not because I have some sort of inside source about this. It's just I just sense those two will click.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like when he took the job in Sacramento, like everyone knows that Sacramento is a hell job.
Right.
Why would you want it, right?
Right.
I think Jaeger looked at Boogie and went, you know what? This is my attempt. I'm going to go there and I'm going to get Boogie on board.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to take this unless I can get Boogie on board. Because if I can do that, then if I can unlock the Cousins, I mean, dude. And I think he looks at it as a challenge, and I think he'll succeed in that challenge.
So, Sarah, it sounds like you do not agree with Mort here.
Oh, honestly, I was more shaking my head because I still can't believe that they got rid of Malone.
So oh.
More of that. I'm like, what the hell were they doing? As far as Jaeger, I don't know. I honestly don't know. But I think, yeah, I mean, he's patient. He comes from a team where certainly his best players, I mean, Mike Conley's a great player too, but they were bigs. So
yep.
I feel like that's a good sign.
Yes.
Hopefully. Yeah, I think he certainly can connect with him, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really good point that, you know, he's coming from a Memphis Grizzlies team where Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol were two of his three best players, and he got those guys to coexist really well, which is going to be very important given their logjam in the front court now. So I'm hopeful for Kings fans. I mean, God, you know, I'm a Sixers fan, so I've been through some suffering lately, and frankly, I want the Kings to suck because I want it to increase the odds of the Sixers getting a primo draft pick next year. But, like, for Kings fans, I just feel so bad. I want you guys to have a good year. Like, you deserve 1 year of just no drama with Boogie. It's because he's going to leave after 2017-18, so at least get one more year of goodness before it all goes to hell. Speaking of things going to hell, Rudy Gay, his agents or sub sources who were most certainly his agents, leaked to Adrian Wojnarowski of The Vertical that he plans on opting out after this year and has no intention of leaving or re-signing with the franchise. So, Morton, how long before they trade Rudy Gay? Do you think he lasts the entire season?
No. I mean, oh, God. See, I say no right off the bat because it's logical not to, or it's logical to trade him because he's made this point.
Right.
But it's the Kings, right?
Yep.
So logic need not apply.
Yeah. Woj did say that they have no intention on trading him right now because they're pushing for a playoff spot. So,
oh, my God.
It's the Kings, basically.
All right. Then I'm just going to let Woj respond on my behalf, but that's obviously the wrong decision.
Right.
Oh, look, let's just talk about the Kings more, you know, generally. Here's the problem, right? Even if Dave Jaeger is going to be this awesome coach and he unlocks Boogie and whatever, like, I wouldn't even put it past Vivek Ranadive to fire his ass after the season.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't.
Right.
This is where we're at. I mean, I know people say, oh, come on, Mort. If he has a good year, obviously he's not going to get fired. Yeah, fair enough. That logic would apply for any other NBA team, and I would buy that, but not for the fucking Kings.
Right.
It's run by idiots at this point, and it's highly disappointing, and I can't wait to see Boogie leave them in his tracks. I don't get the logic of this team. I have zero confidence in their ability to trade neither Rudy or DeMarcus Cousins, and would it surprise you guys if they got, like, two draft picks and a wasted rookie for Boogie and that was it? Like, I don't even think they have the ability to get a decent return for him.
Oh, yeah, no
way. They could be trading him for freaking magic beans for all I know. Like, literal magic beans.
Well, I'm sure other teams know they have no leverage because
yeah.
There's no way Boogie's going to re-sign there. So the longer they wait to trade both him and Rudy Gay, the worse their return is going to be. So I'm with you.
Has the Kings become the official wasteland of the NBA at this point?
Yes.
Remember a couple of years back when it was the Charlotte Bobcats?
Yeah.
And every writer in America's joke was, oh, you know, if a guy doesn't play nice in the locker room, he can always get traded to you know, Charlotte, ha ha ha, because that's the worst play to play. Like, that line just substituted with Sacramento right now.
Yeah.
That's where we're at, right?
Well, it's the place where you go to rehab your image if you are a point guard in need of that, which is what Rajon Rondo did last
year. Oh, I knew it. I knew you were going to throw that in my face. But, you know what? That's, you're so sleeping on the couch. Right now.
But that actually leads to, so they signed Ty Lawson recently, and the only other nominal point guard on their roster is Darren Collison. So do you think Ty Lawson pulls a Rondo and actually rehabs his image to the point where he becomes a useful piece for another team next year?
That's a good question. I mean, that was the idea in Houston as well, but that didn't happen.
Right.
I mean, the Ty Lawson situation to me is also a little bit weird. It seems like he's under the belief that, you know, the DUIs were kind of overblown. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't there. I can't comment. All I know is the DUI is idiotic, but, you know, put that to bed. I have no idea what happened. I don't know if he's like a fully blown alcoholic. I don't know if the rehab he's entered is something he takes seriously or not. Mm-hmm. But so it really all depends on where he's at mentally.
Yeah.
I think it's unfair to me to try to get into his head and say, oh, you know, he's fought his demons and he's beaten them. I have no idea. I don't even know if he has demons or he feels slighted by the media.
Mm-hmm.
No idea, man. But for his sake, I hope so.
Yeah,
obviously, I hope that he gets his, you know, his image and his life back on track and everything it runs smoothly for him, because that's better for him. And in the end, that's better for the NBA.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing we should note, though, is Darren is a damn good point guard.
Yeah, he is.
It's going to be hard, like, beating him out of the job.
Right.
He is so underrated.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think Lawson supplants Collison at any point this year, but I do think he'll be a useful backup, and I think he'll be motivated by what Rondo did last year. I think he'll see that, you know, that Rondo's reputation was tattered when he went to Sacramento. And
still is.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Just because the Bulls signed him, people make it seem like he's kind of good again.
Yeah.
No, everyone is dogging on that one. So.
But he's still got $28 million. So I think Lawson knows if he wants another big payday, he's got to play nice this year. And
$14 million, second year's unguaranteed, thankfully.
Do you have that contract like tattooed on your wrist just so you could remind yourself?
Oh, me having anything to do with Rondo tattooed on my body would not be a good thing.
That's a fair point. All right, so the last thing we should talk about here, Ben McLemore. You know, he's been, I don't want to say a draft bust, because I don't think that's fair, especially given the environment that he's been playing in.
Yeah.
But he has been at least a mild disappointment, I think it's fair to say. You know, it seemed like he was coming on in his second year, and then Carl took over and basically had no patience for him, cut his minutes severely. He did shoot a career best from three-point range last year, but now, you know, as soon as they trade Bellinelli, you think, oh, he's going to get his chance, and then they immediately draft Malachi Richardson and sign Aaron Aflalo. So, Sarah, do you think Ben McLemore has any chance of finally breaking out this year, or is he a lost cause that just needs to get out of Sacramento and find a new team?
I honestly, I'm the kind of person that I never want to say someone is a lost cause. But I don't know. You make a very fair point about the environment. That's probably the worst place, other than the Lakers with Byron Scott last year, to try to develop as a player. So, but you know what's funny? I just pulled something up. It says 2 days ago, NBA trade rumors. This is like the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. DeMarcus Cousins and Ben McLemore to the Blazers for CJ McCollum and Mason Plumlee.
Yeah, I did see that. That's, What? Just to clarify, that's from like one of
the Inquisitor.
Those, yeah, like one of those sites that is not at all a real source. Do not take that as.
I didn't even see that. I'm glad I did.
The Blazers would have to be all on drugs for that one.
And let's not forget, McCollum can't even be traded yet. So
true. Yeah.
Amazing.
Right.
So there's like
details, Morton. Details.
Yeah. Sorry. Screw the CBA. We're gonna do it anyway.
Yabata English cares not for your CBA. Yeah. I mean, I have a feeling, you know, McElmoy has said he's getting nothing but positive vibes from Jaeger, so I think that's a good sign. And he sounds open to the competition. You know, I think Jaeger's gonna give him a fair shot. And if he doesn't pan out, then he's going to leave after next year, and he'll be in like that Dion Waiters mode where he needs to sign a short-term prove it deal, you know, to prove that he can be a long-term piece, but he's still really young. I think he doesn't turn 24 or 25 until next February. I think 24.
24.
Yeah. So he's like,
he's 23 now.
Yeah. He's still very young. That the book is not yet written on McElmoy's career. Yeah. And he shot 42% from three as a freshman at Kansas. Like, the kid can shoot. Just think he's been in a terrible environment for his skills to grow. So he's the guy that I'm going to be keeping my eye on in Sacramento this year. And a positive note, because everything else is a tire fire there. So,
and the Bulls are a trade target for him because he was involved in that alleged POW deal that didn't go through.
Good point.
Like, there was like a Tony Snell, Ben McLemore swap considered in that deal.
Yeah.
So I reckon the Bulls are one of those teams that if they show interest in a guy, they usually go back and revisit it later on. Just see Pau Gasol. They had interest in him in 2007, and then they waited until 2014 when he was 7 years older, because that's when he was interesting again. Same goes for Dwayne Wade. I'm getting off a tangent here, but the point remains. Ben McElmoy could be a Bull.
Yeah. I forget someone from the Sacramento Bee, I think Jason Jones, is that the guy's name? Reported that they have been shopping McElmoy for the last couple of months. He's still available on trade talks. So he, along with Rudy Gay, and to a lesser extent, Boogie, is a name to keep an eye on in that front. So let's move briefly to the Phoenix Suns before we tackle the final team here. I mean, the big additions they made were their two top 10 picks, Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris. They also brought back Jared Dudley, Leandro Barbosa, and also got Tyler Ulis. So I think the big question here, you know, Brandon Knight is back. Eric Bledsoe is back. Devin Booker just broke out. Morton, how do they juggle the minutes between those three guys? And should they trade one?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that, because remember when we covered the Central Division and after we were finished recording, I told you guys I forgot to make a point that I thought Eric Bledsoe would be a perfect trade target for the Bucks.
Yeah.
So this is my chance just to say that while we're actually recording. It's going to be problematic, and not to be a dick about it, but, well, you know, Bledsoe is probably going to go down again at some point. It seems like his body is made of glass. I hope I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. Let me just reiterate that again. I definitely hope I'm wrong. Injuries suck, but he is just, he can't stay healthy. Brandon Knight, I just realized now, missed 30 games last year. Completely blew my mind.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So assuming that those two have injury problems again, then it wouldn't be a tremendous problem, you know, to find minutes. Mm-hmm. But if they are all healthy, then they really would need to juggle it and be a little bit creative. I don't want to see Devin Booker settle for 28 minutes a game. He should be playing at least 32, 33 minutes this year, if not more. I mean, he's so young, he's so gifted, and that shooting ability just needs to have him out there. But no, you know, something's got to give. You also have minutes to Tyler Ulis. You need to give him a little bit of something. So, yeah. And the guy out for me, again, as I mentioned, is Bledsoe.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's just too inconsistent health-wise.
Okay. Yeah.
To be the long-term solution. Even though he's the most talented.
Right.
Let me just point that out.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to make sure that it was the injury history more so than the talent that...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
he's terrific. Like a healthy Eric Bledsoe, all-star player.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think I think you're right that you can't put the genie back in the bottle with Devin Booker. Like, he just makes sense as a two, whereas Bledsoe and Knight were this, like, dual point guard thing that they've been running since the Isaiah Thomas, Goran Dragic era. So I think, you know, he's got to start at the two, and then it becomes, who do you start at the one, Bledsoe or Knight? I think you start Bledsoe, and you have Knight come off the bench. It just seems like the most logical route. I've long thought that the Suns were a logical trade partner with the Sixers. You know, if they're not sold on Alex Len as their long-term answer at center, like a Knight for Nerlens Noel swap, it would probably incite a riot in Philadelphia, but that's...
It shouldn't. That's good. That's,
yeah.
I mean, that's fair.
I'm not super opposed to it, especially given Nerlens' frustration as of late. Like, it would not totally surprise me if those two teams linked up at some point this year. You know, especially, you know, Tyson Chandler's 33, 34. He's very much not going to be a long-term piece of this puzzle. So it really depends on Alex Len, what they think of him and whether they believe he could be a franchise center. So, Sarah, I'm going to throw it back to you again with the infatuation of big men. Do you think Alex Len is a piece worth keeping around long term in Phoenix?
It's funny because you just phrased that two different ways. I mean, he could be a piece worth keeping around, but I don't know that he's your franchise center.
Okay.
Can I answer it that way?
Yes. Yeah, you can.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sold on him yet, as far as that. Like I said, you could keep him around, see how this year goes, for sure. But then you probably want to make that decision next summer and see if you need to start looking for a different center. And at this point, I would say, yeah, keep looking. But sorry, Alex.
Yeah.
No offense, Alex. Morton, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. Look, he is talented. He is young. But it seems like I actually expected a little bit more out of him last year.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he would be further along at this point.
Yeah.
Hasn't happened. But yeah, you know, there's actually another guy on the roster that's more intriguing to me. Not a big man, though, but that's TJ Warren.
Yes.
Like, I know he's only played like 40, is it 40 and 41 games consecutively? He's not been healthy either.
Yeah, but, they've had a lot of injuries, you know, in Phoenix.
Yeah. He was such a tremendous scorer. I think it was NC State he played for, or am I misremembering? I don't know.
I don't remember.
Yeah, but he averaged like 25 points like in his sophomore season or something. He was pretty, I mean, he wasn't like an advanced four-year guy, and he was still, you know, dropping 25 a game. And he started at times last year to look like that same type of player, at least carrying that same mentality. You know, he was attacking the basket. He started stroking the three ball, which he didn't even have in college. And he just seemed like to get a handle on this NBA scoring thing. So it's going to be really intriguing seeing if he can build on that for this year. Like, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he became like a 16-point-a-night guy.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
Right.
I mean...
No, I'm likewise high on him. That actually leads to this final question for Phoenix. So they've got TJ Warren, they have Jared Dudley, they have PJ Tucker, and they have their two young rookies. They have Bender and Chris. So who starts at the three and the four for them this year?
Oh, I knew it was coming, but I don't have an answer. You know what? Hell, it's not going to happen, but I'm just going to share with what I want to happen, and that's TJ Warren and Dragan Bender.
Ooh, okay.
I want it to happen. It's not going to happen because, you know, typical NBA style, we want a veteran out there, even though we're not going anywhere. I just want to, I want them to say, screw it, we're going young, and just giving them all the minutes they can handle, and as soon as they mess up, then you put in PJ Tucker, who cleans everything up.
Yeah, he's a really good underrated player.
He's terrific.
I actually think he's going to start at three. And ready for this hot take? Jared Dudley to start at the four.
Oh, no, I don't think that's a hot take.
Oh,
that's
no?
More than likely.
Oh.
No, he started. He was like a four man in Washington. I know. And he played really well at the four.
I know.
I understand
exactly.
that.
I was going to say I want Dudley on the floor, and that was the only thing I was sure of.
So.
I get that entirely. Dudley's amazing.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I just want to see that youth train get going.
Right. I mean, the Suns are going to be very bad this year. I think that's a fair thing to say. So it does make sense for them to give a lot of minutes to their young guys and. As you said, Morton, get that youth train going. But, I don't think they signed Dudley to what, like 3 years, $30 million? That was not just token money. I think they signed him to play a major role. So we'll see.
Yeah, he's like their Teletovic replacement because Mirza signed for the exact same in Milwaukee.
Right. Yes. And he's going to fill a very similar role. So we will see what happens with Phoenix. Let's turn our attention finally to the Los Angeles Clippers. Who are probably facing the biggest make or break season of any team in this division. So last year, before the season started, if you remember, Doc Rivers spoke with then of Grantland, Zach Lowe, and he basically said, "Look, you know, if we don't win this year, we might have just hit our ceiling." And it happened to Memphis, and it happened to Houston, and it happened to a couple other teams. Like, there's just sometimes you need to blow a core up. Then Blake Griffin partially tears his quad and then breaks his hand punching an equipment staffer. And the Clippers get knocked out in the first round. The Clippers do not actually trade any of these guys, but now they have Blake and CP3 both heading into what will be the final season of their contracts. So Sarah, seeing as the Clippers are one of the Spurs' biggest threats out west, do you think if they don't make the conference finals, this is it for the CP3 Griffin DeAndre core?
I feel like I just saw something yesterday, was it? Where they said they were committed to keeping them together. Mm. I don't know, and I should have made a note of that, but gosh. It's such a strange question because it's like it's a really, really good team.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, the teams do get to this point where you feel like, oh, we gotta do something to break this up because we haven't hit that championship mark that we want. Mm-hmm. But it's so hard for me to give up on a core like that because there again, you never know what could happen. How long do the Warriors reign? You know, they're right there. They really are. And I've seen a lot of people, I think it's the popular thing, actually, to put them over the Spurs right now. At least I've seen several people doing it. And I can't really argue with that. I mean, I think we tend to forget, because it feels like ancient history now, that Blake was a serious MVP contender until he, you know, partially through bad luck, partially through his own decisions, threw his season out the window last year.
Right.
And they have some interesting signings. You know, I still don't really know what are they doing at the three. They got Pierce, Wesley, Mbamute, Darrell Wright, all different guys they could throw in there. Mo Spates, good old Mo Buckets. I mean, they have an interesting roster this year. I think this is probably their best shot in a long time, except for, of course, the fact that the Warriors exist.
Right.
But it's good. If they really underachieve, they might blow it up. But I think if you're close, like you said, if they make the conference finals, then you gotta keep it together.
Yeah. Yeah, and Lowe has said repeatedly, you know, it's really freaking hard to build a 50-win team. Like, you don't give up on that very often. So it would take a lot, I think, for them to actually pull the trigger. And Sarah, I think I saw something similar. I want to say it was even earlier today. I didn't actually click through, but I think it was a story on Pro Basketball Talk about Ballmer saying he's willing to pay whatever it takes to keep Blake and CP3 on the Clippers. So, you know, however much luxury tax they're going to have to pay. It sounds like they're committed to keeping that group together past this year. But as you said, if they really underachieve, if Blake breaks his hand punching someone else again, that might change things. Martin, what do you think? What do you expect from Blake this year after what happened last year?
Hopefully redemption.
Yeah.
He did a really stupid thing. He did a really horrific thing. And I really have no idea like what's going through his head right now. He did write a letter, didn't he?
Yes.
Apologize. I haven't read the letter. Yeah. I just know he published a letter.
Yeah. On the Players
Tribune.
Did he
take full responsibility?
Yes, he did. He said, "All right, yeah, like, it was on the Players Tribune. It's a letter to Clippers fans basically apologizing and saying, I'm an idiot." He said his older brother, I think Taylor is the one, called him and said, "Dude, this isn't you. Like, what are you doing?"
All right.
Yeah, and he said,
"Now, see, that's nice.
Yeah.
Like him recognizing, you know, the need to look inwards.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to carry a lot of weight." Having said that, CP3 is still the engine, right?
Yeah.
Like the Clippers go as far as he goes, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But like he needs his Karl Malone.
Right.
If you understand, like that's really the best pairing for comparison for those two. This is the new generation's Stock and Carl, and they just have this problem of you know getting through.
Yeah.
It's really I have such a hard time putting it into words. It's just something that happens. Like something goes wrong each and every year.
Right.
Something is out of their hands. Something is within their grasp, and then they mess it up. It's just uncanny. But having said that, I think they're looking at the Dallas method.
Yeah.
Remember when, mm-hmm. when Dallas just decided that they want to keep this window open for as long as possible? And like, how long did that window stay open? Like 12, 13 years?
Yeah.
I think that's what they're trying to do. And then they're just praying that something falls their way.
Yeah.
And then they find themselves where they need to be. And let's be honest, like most teams who are, you know, 50 win squads, they all need some kind of luck thrown their way to like beat out Goliath.
Right.
And they sticking together is the easier path. Like if they blow it up, then they have to start all over again. That's another 5 years.
Yeah.
And then there's another 5 years to like break through. So that's a decade right there.
Sure.
I understand the need to stay together, but I wouldn't put it past Blake to like just, for example, look at Russell Westbrook next year and go, well, you're younger, you're more explosive, you could use a four-man, and, you know, I'm from Oklahoma.
Yeah.
You know, and remember, you know, the trade that the three of us thought of.
Mm-hmm.
Russell Westbrook and Serge Ibaka for Blake, Paul, and now that's out of the window right. because, you know, KD's moved on, but I could totally see, like, that Russell Westbrook, Blake Griffin pairing next year.
But
you know, regarding Blake, I don't know, he's just so up and down sometimes. Like I do miss some kind of consistency from him. I know, Sarah, you said that he was an MVP candidate.
Mm-hmm.
I just, when I watch him play, I never get the sense that he is entirely and utterly in full control of the game, which I think you need to be if you're an MVP candidate. He's not, like, let's take your guy and also my guy, Kawhi. Like, mm-hmm. at no point do I feel Kawhi has lost the grasp of the game. Even if they're down, it seems like Kawhi always has an understanding of where the game is, where it's going. Blake has never had the need of that because he's had Chris.
Exactly.
Like, Chris Paul is the guy who has that sense about him. So Griffin plays off of that. But he doesn't seem to have it like himself. He may have it. He may just need to display it.
Mm-hmm.
But that would need for that. Then that would be a need for Paul to not be there for an extended period of time. So it's a good question, Ryan. The short answer is I don't know, and the long answer is the one I just gave.
I think that's all fair. What I would like to see this year is, like, as you guys have been talking about, Chris Paul's the motor. They go as he goes. I would like to see more of, you know, we've seen it before. They put Blake at the elbows a lot, and he's a very good passer from there.
Yeah.
So I feel like let's look into that a little more. Take some of the pressure of creating all of our offense off of Chris Paul, and then too, it could have the bonus impact of, as you were talking about, Warden, getting Blake more in control of the game. Let's see if he has that, because I think it could be there, but like you said, we don't know because Chris Paul dominates so much. That's just kind of the nature of his game. So yeah, if they could kind of spread that a little more, that could be fun.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you brought that word up, you know, dominant. I have a question for you, Brian, like you, the first one. Is Chris Paul, despite his obvious greatness, is he too ball dominant? Especially in this new era of the NBA where everything is movement and cutting?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's an argument to be made for that, I guess. I don't know that I would necessarily say that. I do agree with Sarah that they should take advantage of Blake's passing ability as much as they can. But, you know, in last season before he got hurt, he averaged almost 5 assists a game. So it's not like they weren't taking advantage of it. You know, he's never averaged fewer than 3.2. And Martin, to your point about Blake, you know, not necessarily ever, you're never sure he's got full control of the game. I just think back to the 2014-15 playoffs, and I'm sorry to bring this up, Sarah, because it's when the Clippers knocked out the Spurs in the first round, the defending champions.
Oh, the 7-game series?
Yeah. And Blake, in that, so between that and then, you know, going back to this point that the Clippers always seem to melt down, like the Clippers were up 3-1 against Houston in the second round, and then Josh Smith, of all people, hits a barrage of 3-pointers and knocks them out in 7. And, you know, that was the choke before the Warriors choke. But it throughout that whole playoff run, Blake averaged 25.5 points, 12.7 rebounds, and 6.1 assists in almost 40 minutes a night. Like, he could assert his will on the game. And that series really made me think, like, holy crap, he's really finally putting it all together. So, to the point about Blake, like, you know, whether he can bounce back after this horrible year, I think last year will have given him some perspective, hopefully. And, you know, I think that he acknowledged in their letter, like, we have this reputation of, oh, they're the Clippers, they're going to fall apart, they're going to choke, and we're just saying, screw it, let's just go play ball, let's go have fun, like, let's block out all of this criticism and all of this concern about what's going to happen to us after this year. So I actually kind of think Blake is going to have a very good bounce back year. I think he is ready to atone for his mistakes last year. But, you know, I there is that question of how much responsibility should Chris Paul have, especially as he's getting up in age. And then Austin Rivers, they just handed him a huge new deal too. So in theory, he is there to earn that money. Although I'm not sure you ever want to, I don't think you're ever excited about saying, let's decrease Chris Paul's responsibility and increase Austin Rivers.
Yeah.
You know, I think Alan Anderson's a really good pickup for them.
That's a good call. Yeah. I mean, Sarah, you said, you know, this is probably their best shot at getting to the conference finals, because, you know, OKC is definitely a tier lower than they were before. So it's like the Spurs are their biggest competition for that second spot. I mean, maybe the Portland Trailblazers, like Utah, if things break right, Houston even. But, like, I think the Clippers and the Spurs are a clear 2 and 3 in some order in the West. So I'm very excited to see what happens with the Clippers this year. Let's go to our division predictions, because I actually think outside of the top two, this one is very hard. Obviously, number one, Golden State Warriors. Number two is the Clippers. Morton, who do you have at 3, 4, and 5?
Well, I think the Lakers at 3, and then Sacramento at 4, and then Phoenix at 5.
Okay. Yeah.
And the reason that I know you have the last two reversed. I know you have Phoenix at 4 and the Sacramento at 5. Mm-hmm. But the reason I have Sacramento above is because they had, after all, they have Boogie, and Boogie is still Boogie.
Right.
I mean, he is the best center in the league as far as I'm concerned. I don't think he's I think his sheer willpower is enough to at least pull him up to not being the last in the division.
That's right. I actually thought mine was pretty hot takey, because I think Vegas-wise, Sacramento is third. I think Phoenix is above L.A. Or Phoenix and L.A. are definitely below Sacramento. I just think this is a year where it just, like, officially goes to hell in Sacramento. And, I mean, if you think it was bad before, just wait. Like, I think the gay thing comes to a head this year, and then I think at that point, Boogie just like, what the hell are we doing here, guys? Like, you have four other centers. What's the point? Just trade me. So I'm making that pick assuming that both Rudy Gay and DeMarcus Cousins are not on the Kings by the end of this year. But, you know, I'm really high on the Lakers for reasons unbeknownst to the rest of the world, apparently. So I could be totally wrong here. Sarah, in terms of watchability, I'm sure the Warriors and Clippers are also going to lead the way. But how about 3, 4, and 5 for you?
I would definitely put the Lakers 3. I do think they're an interesting watch this year. Man, the other two, it could really go either way, but I would probably just say Suns because of possible youth and potential and hope. and there's just not a lot of hope in Sacramento.
Yeah.
That's... Of course, like you said, they still have Boogie, and he's great to watch, but...
Yeah.
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 I actually have the Lakers, too, in terms of watchability.
Over the Clippers.
Look, I mean, I like greatness and all that, but I don't enjoy the Clippers brand of basketball as much.
You've tired on Lab City, is what you're saying?
Yeah. You know, I'm one of those really boring dudes. I get more thrill out of seeing like a good screen followed by a good bounce pass than someone lobbing the ball up in the air.
I mean, I do too, actually.
Yeah. I'm so horrible. So it's to me the Lakers and the intrigue of D'Angelo Russell and Brandon Ingram, it's just too much for me to put them at 3, so I have them as the more interesting squad going in.
You're not the only one, though, because a lot of people don't enjoy watching the Clippers for various reasons. Not even just their style, but just feel like, you know, there's always the arguments about their whining or the fact that they don't seem like they're having fun, so it's kind of weird.
Well, that doesn't bother me, because I think every team bitches.
They definitely do.
Every team. It's uncanny, so I don't even see the big difference there. It's just, I just feel like you have Chris, who holds the ball a lot. And don't get me wrong, he's absolutely terrific. It's much the same. And then you have DeAndre, you know, the free throw shooting. That's probably a part of it, because the game slows down a lot.
That's a good point.
You go into Haga, DeAndre. So that's really the crux of it, I think. I mean, I actually think I enjoy the game more when Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan is out of the game, and as we mentioned, like Blake is having his own way. I think that's a little bit more fun.
Yeah.
I don't see him controlling the game, but I do see him having fun out there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Okay. So, coach of the year. I don't think there's going to be any argument here for Steve Kerr.
Nope. argument.
Okay. I mean, Luke Walton could be a fun choice, and then even Jaeger if he connects with Boogie, but let's be honest, Steve Kerr is coaching a 73-win team that just got Kevin Durant. There's no contest here. MVP of the division. Who do we have? Morton, let's start with you.
Stephen Durant. Stephen Durant.
They're conjoined now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's. I can't. You know, I know you have KD, but I can't separate those two right now. I think it's so wildly unfair.
Yeah.
I can't. I gotta merge them somehow.
That's fair.
So, which would be ridiculously frightening in its own right, but yeah. So, Stephen Durant.
Okay. Sarah, how about.
With a little bit of Boogie.
Oh, God. Sarah, how about you?
It probably is a Warrior, but it is hard to separate them right now. You kind of do take points because they have such a collection of talent.
Right.
I'm just going to say Blake because I want it to be Blake. I hope he has a great year and comes back. I think the Players Tribune article was really... He always is really, you know, does a great job when he writes those.
when he writes those.
Yes, right. But yeah, I'm so, even though he had to bring up in that as well that they're the same core that beat the defending champion Spurs, that was not my favorite part, but
right.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Blake.
I like that. Yeah, I mean, I wrote a piece, I think, last year for B-Ball Breakdown, right before he got hurt and broke his hand, about how well he was playing and how he was kind of a dark horse MVP candidate, and then he got hurt, and I looked like an idiot. But there will always be those first 2 months. But yeah, I mean, I would, Morton, I mean, obviously, I think your argument is fair, that it's got to be a Warrior, and it's Steph and KD are the clear two choices among those. I mean, in terms of MVP, if there were voting per division, just how trends go, it seems like newcomers tend to get a more of a bump. So I think just by virtue of if KD slides in seamlessly and averages 25 a game and the Warriors win 70 again, I think he would just get more credit for that than Steph, even if it meant, you know, even if Steph played better than KD, I think just the upgrade from Harrison Barnes to Kevin Durant would give him the bump there. So let's wrap things up here with our crushes from the division. Sarah, I'm going to start with you here.
I already talked about him. It's Larry Nance Jr.
Oh, yeah. It's a good one.
I love his hustle and his energy. And he's just, like, he's not necessarily great at any one aspect, but he does all the little things, so he's my favorite in the whole division.
That's a really good pick. Morton, how about you?
Everyone who's not Austin Rivers.
Literally every player.
Yeah. That's really how I want to quantify it. Oh, Austin is, you know, he had a couple nice games, right? But he's just not my sort of player. I don't enjoy watching him play. I think he's extremely overrated. But this is really difficult. Like, a part of me wants to say Pat McCaw.
Ooh.
But he's a rookie and we don't know how he's going to look yet. Right. So that might be a little bit premature. You know, I'm actually going to go Archie Goodwin.
Damn, good pick. I like that.
Because we didn't even talk about him.
Yeah.
I kind of forgot. He's flying under the radar a little
bit.
He's developed his J. He's still athletic. This is my own personal theory of mine, and it's horrible because I have nothing to back it up with, but I think he would be a lot better if he just, like, focused in on defense and became, like, defense-first type of energy guy. Mm. Like, some sort of taller Tony Allen. He's got quick feet, quick hands. If he gets coached the right way and he becomes a dog defensively, mm-hmm. I think he could carve out a wonderful niche in the league.
Yeah. I think that's a really good person to bring up, and yet another thing for Phoenix to deal with in that backcourt rotation. I had conventional picks, D'Angelo Russell and Devin Booker, both of whom we talked about earlier, but since you guys really went out of the box, I'm taking Ben McLemore. I really want to see. I don't know if he's good. Let's start there. I don't know if he is a good basketball player, but I want to find out this year, and I'm excited to see him rise to the challenge of, you know, I don't think Malachi Richardson is going to get much playing time this year. He was pretty raw, really only came on until the end of the year. So I think Aaron Aflalo is his main competition. I have a feeling Aflalo starts just by veteranness and blah, blah, blah. But I want to see what McLemore is, and if he is a potential, I don't want to say star at the two, but, you know, a decent up-and-coming two, or if he's basically just the next coming of Dion Waiters. So that's my spiel on McLemore. So this is going to wrap things up for the Pacific Division preview for the NBA podcast. Sarah, I'm sorry, but we got to do it next time. We got to talk about the Spurs. So join us then as Sarah finally gets to mourn Tim Duncan's retirement. But he's already back in the Spurs organization, so she can't be too upset.
Kind of helps.
And Pau Gasol is there, so, you know, no worries.
Yeah, good. We're going to have a lot of trolling next episode from Morton. Until then.
Hold on. Was it a nightmare, or did I really read it? Somebody said that Pau's going to make people forget about Tim. Who? Where did I see that?
You know what? I actually read something along those lines on Twitter a couple of days ago as well.
I saw it.
I don't remember where, but I saw something similar.
All right.
So
anyway,
we're going to discuss that article in full next time, because that is horrible. Until then, I'm Brian Toporek. I was joined by Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. Always good talking to you guys.
You too, Brian.
Likewise, Brian. Take care, guys.